Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain stands as one of America's most remarkable yet overlooked leaders. Before becoming a Civil War hero, he was a mild-mannered Bowdoin College professor fluent in 9 languages. His transformation culminated in his famous bayonet charge at Gettysburg's Little Round Top, a moment that may have saved the Union. Though forgotten for decades, Chamberlain experienced a cultural resurrection through Ken Burns' documentary The Civil War and the film Gettysburg, which introduced millions to his extraordinary courage. What makes his story so compelling is how he repeatedly answered the call to serve as soldier, governor, college president, and civic leader, always guided by unwavering principles rather than personal ambition. His life reveals how ordinary individuals can rise to extraordinary challenges when principle and opportunity converge. Do it! That's how! These words from Chamberlain's father, shouted when young Joshua's wagon became stuck between tree stumps, became an order for life. 4 key influences shaped his character: Christian faith, music, adventure, and education. His religious foundation formed through daily Bible readings and memorization. Unable to afford a bass viol, he constructed one from a cornstalk for the church choir, his first taste of mastery. Chamberlain explored Maine's wilderness and visited Penobscot Indians, learning elements of their language as his first step toward becoming a polyglot. He refused to hunt, feeling it is a mean thing to snatch a pleasure at another's loss. Education became a family tension point as Lawrence, his preferred name, approached adulthood. His father wanted him at West Point, while his mother hoped he'd become a minister. To postpone this decision, Lawrence applied to Bowdoin College, creating a 17-hour daily study schedule and memorizing all 573 pages of a Greek grammar book in preparation. At Bowdoin, Chamberlain excelled academically, despite struggling with a severe stammer, particularly with words beginning with B, P, and T, a significant obstacle in a curriculum based on oral recitation. He earned awards in languages, oratory, composition, mathematics, and astronomy. A defining moment came when Lawrence refused to identify classmates involved in mischief. When President Woods demanded names, Lawrence stated, "I have conscientious scruples against that, sir." Facing possible suspension, he maintained he would accept punishment rather than become an informer. This principled stand impressed his peers and revealed the courage that would later define him. While directing Brunswick's first parish choir, Lawrence met Frances Caroline Adams, Fanny, a talented organist. Despite religious differences, Fanny had declined joining the church due to her inability to accept traditional Christian beliefs. Their relationship flourished. After overcoming family objections and a period of separation while Fanny studied music in New York, she accepted his proposal, though they postponed marriage until after Lawrence completed his theological studies. As the Civil War intensified, Chamberlain heard from former students about poor army leadership. "We want cool, self-reliant, self-controlling officers." When Lincoln called for 300,000 more men in July 1862, Chamberlain wrote to Maine's governor, "I fear this war, so costly of blood and treasure, will not cease until the men of the North are willing to leave good positions and sacrifice the dearest personal interests." Though offered a colonelcy, Chamberlain requested a lower rank. "Give the colonelcy to some regular officer now in the field. I will learn and earn my way to the command." His leadership qualities emerged when 40 mutinous soldiers arrived. While General Meade ordered to make them do duty or shoot them, Chamberlain instead provided food and fresh clothing, addressed them as fellow soldiers, and promised to examine their cases while requiring they follow orders. His empathetic but firm approach worked. Nearly all agreed to fight. On July 2, 1863, Chamberlain's depleted 20th Maine arrived at Gettysburg following Union defeats. When Confederates targeted the undefended Little Round Top, his regiment rushed to position with clear orders. "This is the left of the Union line. You are to hold this ground at all costs." Chamberlain positioned his 358 remaining men, just a third of the regiment's original strength, at the extreme left of the Union line. When Confederates attempted to flank him, he formed his line into a right angle. With ammunition nearly exhausted, he ordered a bayonet charge that broke the Confederate resistance and secured the vital position. Nearly a year later, at Petersburg, Chamberlain received a grave wound when a miniball tore through his body from hip to hip, severing blood vessels and damaging organs. Despite catastrophic blood loss, he thrust his sword into the ground to steady himself, refusing to let his men see him fall. Though doctors believed the wound mortal, Chamberlain wrote to Fanny, "I am lying mortally wounded, the doctors think, but my mind and heart are at peace. Jesus Christ is my all-sufficient Savior." After the war, Chamberlain served four terms as Maine's governor. He opposed temperance laws on individual rights grounds and addressed economic challenges through railroad development and establishing New Sweden, a settlement of recruited immigrants in northern Maine. As Bowdoin College president from 1871, he expanded scientific curriculum despite alumni religious concerns and transformed campus culture by treating students as gentlemen rather than subjects needing constant supervision. His introduction of mandatory military drill sparked the Drill Rebellion, revealing generational differences in concepts of manliness. Chamberlain's defining leadership moment came during Maine's 1880 political crisis, when both parties claimed electoral victory. Appointed to restore order and warned of assassination threats, he confronted the mob directly in the Capitol Rotunda. Opening his coat, he declared, "Men, you wish to kill me, I hear. Killing is no new thing to me. I am here to preserve the peace and honor of this state. If anybody wants to kill me for it, here I am." After a tense silence, the crowd dispersed. He later wrote to Fanny, "Yesterday was another round top." In his final decades, Chamberlain became a celebrated Civil War speaker, enriching his speeches with classical literature and his knowledge of nine languages. His empathy toward Confederate soldiers was exemplified when he ordered a respectful shoulder-arms salute to surrendering Confederates at Appomattox, a gesture that Confederate General Gordon reciprocated. Despite deteriorating health from war wounds, Chamberlain remained active until his death in 1914 at 85. Thousands lined Portland's snowy streets for his funeral, where he was eulogized for the texture to his mind and quality of personality that would have made him conspicuous and lovable even without his achievements. Chamberlain's enduring legacy stems not just from battlefield heroics, but from his consistent moral courage throughout life. Whether facing enemy fire at Gettysburg, angry mobs in Augusta, or resistance at Bowdoin, he stood firmly on principle while treating others with dignity. His example shows that true leadership combines unwavering conviction with compassion, standing firmly for one's beliefs while honoring the humanity of opponents.